One of the biggest culprits for causing anxiety in our lives is unfulfilled desire. You really want something and you don't get it, or you fear you might not get it. And that causes all kinds of inner turmoil. What's the solution? Weaker desires? No desire? In today's podcast, God is going to show us how to have strong desires and inner peace and joy right alongside those desires, even when the desires are unfulfilled.
Welcome to the Food for Your Soul podcast, where we apply the Word of God to the hearts of men and women to stoke the fires of your delight in Christ. Here's your host, Dr. D. Richard Ferguson.
When you get your happiness from stuff or circumstances or fun or whatever, that's kind of like feeding the bears at a state park. The reason they say don't feed the bears is because if you give a bear your bologna sandwich, the bear doesn't just go skipping off into the woods saying, oh, I'm so thankful for this blessing, right? What does it do? It comes back, and the next tourist it sees fully expects another sandwich, and if he doesn't get it, it kills the tourist, right? Feeding the bears makes the park dangerous for other people because the more you feed them, the less satisfied they are. Our souls are like that. Trying to satisfy your soul's cravings with money or possessions or fun or pleasant temporal circumstances is like feeding the bears. All it'll do is make your soul just crave more and more and more. Proverbs 30:15 says, the leech has two daughters. Give, give, they cry. Your soul, let's talk about the greedy soul. Your soul will become like a leech that just goes through life like a little kid saying, gimme, 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 gimme. And one thing, if you notice a little kid that uses that word, gimme, the kid's never happy, right? You ever seen a happy kid say that? They're never happy. No matter how much he gets, he's not satisfied. It goes on. It says, give, give, they cry. There are three things that are never satisfied, four that never say enough, the grave, the barren womb, the land, which is never satisfied with water, and fire, which never says enough. You ever walked up to your campfire with another log, and the campfire said, oh, no, I couldn't possibly. I'm so full, I couldn't consume another twig. Doesn't happen. You can literally put an entire forest on it, and it will consume the whole thing and still want more, right? And the coveting soul is like that. The more you feed it, the hotter it burns. Nothing is ever enough. It just keeps consuming. And the Bible has a name for that fire, and it's called the word I just used, coveting, or greed. Greed and coveting are synonyms, exact same word. You can never put the fire of coveting out by throwing sticks on it. You can't satisfy covetousness by going on better vacations or winning the lottery or any amount of earthly pleasure. I mean, you hear about athletes, right? Some pro athlete that he's going to uproot his family, leave this, pass up a chance to be on the championship team, whatever, because that team will pay him $20 million a year and this team will only pay him $15 million a year. And that's not enough. Right? $15 million a year, it's not enough. And his soul is like, more, more. Right? It's that fire. So that's coveting. Contentment is just the opposite of coveting. Okay? So the Bible doesn't mention the word contentment very often, but it mentions coveting a whole lot. So it actually does talk about contentment. It's just the opposite of it. Contentment is the opposite of coveting, but where it gets a little sticky trying to define it, I mean, have you ever tried to define contentment? What does contentment mean? It's tough because it's not wrong to desire things. I mean, it's okay even to desire something a lot. I've heard of people defining, I've listened to a lot of sermons on contentment in the last few weeks, and I've heard definitions like contentment is when you don't want anything more than what you already have. Is that what contentment is? You're not allowed to want anything. You're not allowed to desire possessions or money. You're not allowed to ever do something to try to increase your income or invest in something that might increase in value, or that doesn't really work, right? I mean, if you have a lazy 18-year-old son who sits on the couch all day and won't go out and get a job, do you say to him, oh, I'm so proud of you, you're being content? No, right? No. I think we can all agree that desire for money, even a driving desire that drives you to work hard to get money, is not a bad thing. So at what point does desire cross the line into discontent? You want something, you crave something, that's okay until it crosses this line, and then it's sinful, then it's discontent. Where is that line? Well, what if we just look at the context and try to define it that way? What has Paul been talking about in the context? He's been talking about replacing anxiety with what? The peace of God that transcends understanding, right? And it seems to me he just got done talking about that, and then he immediately starts talking about contentment. I think what Paul's doing here is using contentment here as just another way of describing that peace of God that gets rid of anxiety. Contentment is when you have the peace of God instead of anxiety, especially in relationship to money and possessions. That's contentment. It's when you have the peace of God in your heart right there alongside your desire. It's not a contentment is not a lack of desire. You have the desire, but right next to the desire, alongside that desire, is the peace of God. That's contentment. So, I really, really, really want this thing, but I'm fine without it, if that's what God decides. I desire this different situation in my life, but I'm perfectly at peace if I don't get it. I treasure this thing that's precious to me that I have, but if it were taken from me, it wouldn't disturb my peace. That's contentment. So, how do you know when you've crossed the line from legitimate desire into discontent? It's when you have anxiety about it. That's one way you can know when you've crossed the line of discontent, when you have that kind of anxiety about stuff. Another way you can know is if you find yourself complaining, because contentment is never going to complain. Another way you can know you're discontented is if you have self-pity instead of gratitude, or if you have anger over something when you lose it or don't get what you want. So contentment is when the peace of God fills your soul and you have joy and gratitude no matter what your circumstances are, because it's not dependent on circumstances. Contentment is independent from circumstances, and that's the big point that Paul makes here. In fact, that's what the Greek word means. The literal meaning of this word for contentment means to be independent. Your happiness and peace don't depend on what you have or what you don't have. Verse 11, I've learned to be content whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need. I know what it is to have plenty. I've learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, living in poverty or plenty or in want. So he's saying my circumstances have no impact at all on my contentment. They have nothing to do with it. And that's he just repeats that like three or four times. And I was wondering if Paul had been reading Habakkuk when he wrote this. Look at chapter 3, verse 16. He says, I heard, and my heart pounded. My lips quivered at the sound. Decay crept into my bones, and my legs trembled. So he knows his life is going to become an absolute nightmare. But then look at his response in verse 17. He says, though the fig tree does not bud, and there are no grapes on the vines, though the olive crop fails, and the fields produce no food, there are no sheep in the pen, no cattle in the stalls, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will be joyful in God my Savior. Now, that last verse, verse 8, does that sound kind of familiar? Basically what he's saying is, I will rejoice in the Lord always. I'll say it again, I will rejoice. Even if absolutely everything is taken away from me and my whole world falls apart around me, it won't affect my joy because I rejoice in the Lord, not in that stuff. Joy in the Lord, apart from circumstances, is what contentment is. I love Jeremiah Burroughs' definition of contentment. Listen to this definition he gives. Christian contentment is that sweet, inward, quiet, gracious frame of spirit which freely submits to and delights in God's wise and fatherly disposal in every condition. That's a great definition. The word disposal, back in the 1600s when he wrote that, means arrangement, the way God arranged stuff, the way he arranges circumstances. Christian contentment is that sweet, inward, quiet, gracious frame of spirit which freely submits to and delights in God's wise and fatherly disposal in every condition. Contentment is when your spirit is calm because you're submitting to and delighting in God's wise and fatherly arrangement of circumstances. In other words, you love providence. You love providence. That's contentment. So some financial hardship comes your way. Doesn't disturb your peace. Doesn't disturb your joy in your heart. You still have that sweet, inward, quiet frame of spirit. Why? Because you know that this hard circumstance is from God, and so you're freely submitting to it. You say, oh, that's providence. I love providence because it comes from God. Something God has done. By the way, that definition comes from Burroughs' book, The Rare Jewel of Christian Contentment. Probably the best book there is out there on contentment, written back in the 1600s. I don't know if anybody's improved on it in 400 years, although Watson's book on contentment is also good. Anyway, it's just a very little short book, very easy to read. If you struggle with this, I highly recommend that book. You can just get it free online. I can't imagine anybody still being discontent after reading that little book. And if you are, then you read Watson's books, and then you're really not going to have a problem. But I like this. I like this definition. The underlying idea of it is, whatever God does, you embrace it. Whatever God does in your life, you embrace it because you love His providence. So discontent, getting all worked up because you don't have something or that you want, or you lost something, or getting all spun up inside because you wish you had some different circumstances, that is a rejection of God's providence, isn't it? When we get upset because of the circumstances God gives, we're rejecting providence. Discontent is when your soul refuses to accept what God is doing, refuses to accept providence, which is like a mosquito declaring war on a tank. You don't do well when you oppose providence. That's frustrating for the mosquito. God sends some situation into your life. Your soul resists it. I don't like this situation. It's a wrong situation for me. It's a wrong size paycheck for me right now. And it needs to be big. I don't like this job situation. I don't like this marriage situation or singleness situation. I don't like the situation with my body. I don't like my kitchen, my car, my cell phone, my phone, my retirement plan, the weather outside, personality type God gave me, spiritual gifts, whatever. And every day your soul is just banging up against the tank of providence and refusing to accept God's wisdom in the way that He arranged circumstances in your life. So the next time you find your soul resisting God's providence and you're restless, unhappy because of the circumstances God sent your way, one thing you may consider is go to Job 38. Job chapter 3. When Job, I won't take the time to read it now, but when Job lost everything, immediately, his first response was really good, right? I mean, he had a great immediate response, but over time, he started questioning providence. And he started acting like what God allowed to happen to him wasn't right. God shouldn't have done it, and he owed Job an explanation. And so he starts demanding an explanation, and God responds to that, starting in chapter 38, and He doesn't give Job an explanation. Now, there was a perfectly good explanation. We get it, right? If we read chapter 1, we get it. We see what was going on. But Job never gets that. He never gets to see it. Instead of giving Job an explanation, what God does in chapter 38 is starts explaining to Job, gives him a lesson on how qualified God is to run the universe without Job's help. The next time you're discontented, you find your soul ramming up against the tank of divine providence, just sit down and start reading Job 38. Where God just starts listing His credentials for being qualified to make decisions about how things go in this universe, and see how far you have to read before you start responding like Job, and you put your hand over your mouth and say, I didn't know what I was talking about, forgive me, I shouldn't have said anything, because you know what you're doing and I don't. I know nothing about what's best, so God, I trust You to orchestrate circumstances the best way possible. And I'm just going to be like Paul. I'm going to be like Habakkuk. Even if I lose everything in this world, gain everything in this world, whatever, I'm going to rejoice in You alone. That's the goal. So what's the principle that we learn here then about, if we just go back to the beginning, how do you rejoice in a time of blessing? How do you rejoice in the Lord in a time of blessing? When God gives you a gift, how do you make sure your happiness is in the giver and not the gift? Contentment. It starts with contentment.
Imagine a little child going on a trip with his dad. Dad tells him, this is going to be the best trip of your life. So they get to the city where they're going, and dad says, stay close to me. And the kid, he loves going places with his dad, and he knows this trip is going to be amazing, and so he's all excited. They're walking down a busy sidewalk, and the kid sees something across the street that looks interesting. He starts to head over there, and dad says, no, don't go over there. Stick with me. You're going to love this. So as intrigued as the kid was about what he saw over there, as much as he wanted to go over there, he was fine with leaving it behind because he trusted his dad to bring him somewhere better. That's what it's like to have a desire, a strong desire, and inner peace. Desire that causes anxiety is when the kid sees what he wants and he doesn't trust his dad. He thinks, that thing over there across the street, nothing dad's going to do is going to be as cool as that. If I don't go over there, I'm going to miss out. Then when his dad doesn't let him go, he's all agitated and upset. That's the kind of desire that goes along with anxiety. Think of the desires you have in your life right now. What would it look like for them to be that second kind, the kind that causes anxiety when they're unfulfilled, or even anxiety if they might go unfulfilled? And if you have desires like that, what would it look like for them to become the first kind, the kind where the kid is just fine with letting that thing go and sticking with his dad's plan?
Thank you for listening. If you found today's episode edifying, why not share it with a friend? This season of the Food for Your Soul podcast features excerpts from our sermon series on the book of Philippians, 50 expository sermons covering every verse. You can find those and hundreds of other sermons for free download on drichardferguson.com. Until next time, rejoice in the Lord always and set your mind on things above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God.